Turn to Proverbs 11:15. This is probably going to be one of the shortest Bible studies that I've ever done, I think. I don't have a lot here tonight, but the next verse would be too long to get into. So, Proverbs 11:15. He that is surety for a stranger shall smart for it, and he that hateth suretyship is sure. So let's look at the first half of that. He that is surety for a stranger shall smart for it. Surety is means of being sure, a formal engagement entered into, a pledge, bond, guarantee, or security given for the fulfillment of an undertaking, a person who undertakes some specific responsibility on behalf of another who remains primarily liable. One who makes himself liable for the default or miscarriage of another or for the performance of some act on his part, for example, payment of a debt, appearance in court for trial, etc. It's a bail or security. So think of a cosigner for a loan. That would be the easiest way to think of a surety. A stranger is one who belongs to another country, a foreigner, chiefly now exclusively, one who resides in or comes to a country to which he is a foreigner, an alien. And then it says that definition is now somewhat rare, and recent examples show a mixture of since 2 and 4. And when it says recent, I don't remember exactly the time period, but it was probably referring to hundreds of years ago. But anyway, when you go to number 2, one who is not a native of, or who has not long resided in a country, town, or place. So kind of like when we first moved to Excelsior Springs, we would have been strangers until we lived here for a while and got to know some people. Chiefly a newcomer, one who has not yet become well acquainted with the place, or one who is not yet well known. And then smart is, when you're speaking of wounds, etc., to smart, the verb, is to be a source of sharp pain, to be acutely painful. And we still use the word like that sometimes, like, oh, that smarts, like if you hit your finger or something. So in other words, when it says there that he that is surety for a stranger shall smart for it, a man that gives a guarantee to someone he does not know well to ensure that his debt is paid if he defaults will suffer sharp pain. This is kind of one of those proverbs which should be obvious to anybody. I mean, anybody that would be a guarantor of somebody's debt that they don't know is an idiot. I mean, pretty much. Yeah. I mean,
it takes it a step further than 6:1 did.
Yes. Yes.
For thy friend.
Right.
You
yes.
Know the guy.
Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, along those lines to what you just said, Judy, a man who becomes surety for his friend is stupid. Now, this is actually what Proverbs says. Proverbs 17 and verse 18. He may be nice, but he's stupid. Proverbs 17:18. A man that is void of understanding. Remember, understanding is the intellect. Void means you don't have any. It's so stupid. A man void of understanding striketh hands. That's when you shake hands. You know, you make a deal. And become a surety in the presence of his friend. See, he's not shaking hands with his friend. He's becoming surety in the presence of his friend. His friend needs the loan. He strikes hands with the banker or the loan or whoever and says, yep, I'll be on the hook for his debt if he doesn't pay. And it says here that you're void of understanding or a dummy, in other words, if you do something like that. And there are several reasons for that. Or I'll give you three at least. First of all, it's a good way to go broke if something happens to your friend and he can't pay. Proverbs 22:26-27. It says, be not thou one of them that strike hands, or of them that are sureties for debts. If thou hast nothing to pay, why should he take away thy bed from under thee? So if you are surety, and your friend has nothing to pay, then you have to pay it. And if you have nothing to pay, then guess what? They're coming after your house or your bed or your whatever, your any assets that they can get a hold of. So it's a good way to go broke, number one. Number two, it's a good way to lose a friend if he can't pay. Because if you guarantee a friend's loan and then the friend can't pay, how long do you suppose you're going to be friends after that episode? And you have to pay his debt for him. And then thirdly, it's a good way to get sued or killed if you don't have the money to pay your friend's debt if he defaults, depending on who he borrowed it from. If you struck. I was trying to think of the right. If you struck hands with a mafia boss, you know, and guaranteed the debt that he owed to the mafia boss, and he doesn't pay, there's probably a good chance you're going to die or have your kneecaps broken or something, right? So it would be a very, very bad idea to do something like that. Now, if a man who becomes surety for his friend is stupid, then a man that becomes surety for a stranger is exceedingly stupid. Because at least for a friend, you can say, well, you know, he's my friend. I feel bad for him. I can trust him. He's going to pay it back. I don't have to worry about it. I know this guy. The stranger? I mean, just imagine somebody comes up and says, hey, you know, I just met this guy. I don't really know him too well, but he's fallen on hard times, and he really needs a car. And I know you got some money, and the bank won't give him a loan for the car, but he seems like a nice guy. Why don't you just co-sign for him, and then, you know, it'll be all right. You'd be a total idiot to do that if you didn't even know the guy at all. I mean, it'd be a bad idea regardless, but it'd be a really bad idea if you didn't know who the guy was. See, the friend's more likely to be sure to pay off his debt and not leave you on the hook for it, if he's a real friend, because what friend would want to leave you on the hook for it? But a stranger has little to no incentive to pay it because he doesn't know you and he probably won't deal with you again, might not ever see you again, right? So why would the stranger work to pay that debt off for all that time when he could just default on it and you could pay it, right? Why would he do that? So thus, he that is surety for a stranger shall smart for it. It's going to be painful because the likelihood is quite high that he's not going to pay the debt. If you're surety for your friend, you might not smart for it. There's a risk of that. But if you're surety for a stranger, you're asking for pain because it's probably not going to end well. Like I said, this is basically just common sense. It can also be not only painful financially, it could be painful emotionally too. Because for one thing, you'd have the pain of guilt of embarrassment for being stupid, right? So that would be painful, it would be embarrassing, it would be humiliating. And then just having the feeling of somebody ripping you off and realizing later, oh, that guy, he was never going to pay it anyway. He just took advantage of me. So you'd have all those emotions as well as the financial pain. So if a man is stupid enough to be surety for a stranger, you better take some collateral from him to hedge against the likelihood that neither of them are going to pay it back. Because chances are, if somebody's dumb enough to be surety for a stranger, he might not pay the debt back either. The stranger nor him would. So if you happen to be loaning money to somebody and somebody else co-signs, and those two people don't even know each other or know each other very well, you better take some collateral from the guy that's striking hands with you, because chances are he's not going to pay back either. Proverbs 20 and verse 16. Proverbs 20:16. Take his garment that is surety for a stranger, and take a pledge of him for a strange woman. So, I mean, this must be a small debt that Solomon's talking about here, because to take his garment isn't exactly going to cover the cost of a Cadillac or something. But, you know, something minor like that, you're taking something that is of, you know, somewhat equivalent value possibly, just to make sure that you get your money back. That's why banks require collateral for loans and things. Same idea. Now, what happens if you already became surety for a friend? Maybe you didn't know this. Maybe you didn't pay attention to the Bible study that was, you know, a few years ago or however long ago that was or whatever. And hopefully that's not the case. But maybe somebody hearing this, maybe they didn't realize it and they think, oh, man, I've co-signed for my son or my parents or my, you know, friend or somebody. What do you do in that case if you did become guarantor or co-signer for somebody else's debt? Well, what you do is Proverbs chapter 6, 1 through 5, and that's you do the best you can. You make all the effort that you can to make sure, first of all, that the friend pays the debt, and then secondly, that you can get out from underneath that contract that you've entered into. And this is basically what Solomon's teaching us here in Proverbs 6, 1 through 5. And we talked about this. I talked about this a lot in, you know, in those, when I was in those verses. That's why I'm not spending a ton of time on this tonight. He says, "My son, if thou be surety for thy friend, if thou hast stricken thy hand with a stranger." Remember, so you got three parties here. You got the friend who wants the loan. You got the stranger that is loaning him the money, but your friend is not, for whatever reason, the stranger won't loan it to him because he doesn't trust him to pay it back. And then you have you stepping in saying, "I'll guarantee it. I'll make sure that if he doesn't pay it, I will." If you've done that, Solomon says, "Thou art snared with the words of thy mouth. Thou art taken with the words of thy mouth." You've just entered into a trap because of the word that you gave. You said, "I will take care of it if he doesn't." And now you're in the trap. What do you do? "Do this now, my son, and deliver thyself," or save thyself, in other words. "When thou art come into the hand of thy friend, go humble thyself and make sure thy friend." Now, if you remember, I don't know if you remember looking at this verse before, but making sure thy friend, you make sure that he's going to pay the debt, right? You humble yourself so you don't go up there and demand that he pays the debt, because he might just get mad and say, "You know what, you want to treat me like that? I'm not going to pay it, and you can pay it," right? So you humble yourself. You go there and you entreat him and say, "You know, just want to see how things are going. You know, just make sure you're going to pay that debt off, right? And you thought about working some overtime maybe to get that thing paid off quickly, and, you know, keep working at it. You don't want to ruin your credit score, right? You don't want to, you know, give him all these reasons why it would be best for him, you know, to pay this off. So you make sure thy friend, you make sure that he's doing what he's supposed to. Give not sleep to thine eyes, nor slumber to thine eyelids." So this is something that you want to take care of, and you don't want to put off. You don't want to procrastinate. You want to make sure that your friend is going to pay this debt off. "Deliver thyself as a roe from the hand of the hunter, or as a bird from the hand of the fowler." So you make sure he gets that thing paid off. And then, if he gets it paid off to a certain extent, maybe he gets half of it paid, then possibly he can renegotiate with the lender, and the lender would then have, you know, maybe some collateral that he could take from him, since he's already paid him that amount of money. Maybe the lender would drop the cosigner. A lot of times they'll do that. Once you get to a certain point, you don't have to be a cosigner anymore when you get to a certain amount paid off. So that's how you could deliver yourself from that situation. And then the second half of the proverb goes on to say, Proverbs 11:15, "And he that hateth suretyship is sure." To hate is to hold in very strong dislike, to detest, to bear malice to. It's the opposite of to love. Suretyship is the position or function of a surety, responsibility or obligation undertaken by one person on behalf of another as for payment of a debt, performance of some act, etc. So suretyship is basically the noun form of being a surety, or something like that, anyway. And sure is, he says, "He that hateth suretyship is sure." Sure is free from or not exposed to danger or risk, not liable to be injured or destroyed, safe, secure. So in other words, a man that strongly dislikes and detests being responsible and obligated to pay another's debt will be free from financial danger and risk, and is not liable to be financially destroyed. Sometimes it's good to hate things, right? It says, "Ye that fear the Lord, hate evil." It says that I esteem all thy precepts to be, concerning all things to be right, and I hate every false way. So there are things that it's good to hate, and suretyship is one of them. You can have a righteous, holy hatred for being surety for somebody else's debt, because the Bible certainly teaches it is not a good idea. And if you hate suretyship, you're probably not going to be surety, and therefore you're going to be sure, you're going to be safe. It's always a safe bet to not be a guarantor of someone else's debt. It's bad enough to be in debt yourself. That's bad enough. It's really dumb to be basically in debt for somebody else, because you're on the hook if they default. That's a really bad idea. Now, I would say, based on what I've read here in the scripture, it would be a very rare situation that you should even consider being surety for someone else, even if he's family. And there's good reason for that, because a person shouldn't be going into debt for basically anything with the exception of buying a house or maybe starting a business. And even borrowing money for those things is, if it can be avoided, is a good thing. But, you know, buying a house is, most people are going to have to go into debt for that. But anything else, people shouldn't be going into debt for. So if somebody shouldn't be going into debt for something, why would you guarantee his debt of something that he shouldn't even be going into debt for? And you certainly don't want to be surety for a house. You're going to be on the hook for 30 years or 15 years or however long the mortgage is, or at least until they renegotiate it or something. So it just doesn't make sense really almost in any situation to be surety for anybody. Because all other things outside of a house, including cars or home maintenance or home upgrades, you know, adding to your home or something, remodeling your home, all that kind of thing, appliances, even the expensive ones like refrigerators or washers and dryers or dishwashers or all that kind of thing, computers, smartphones, tools, equipment, you know, tractors and things like that, furniture, four-wheelers, motorcycles, boats, other toys, all that kind of stuff should be paid for in cash. Nobody should be going into debt for any of that stuff. And one reason for that is every one of those things, with the exception of maybe like home upgrades, but every one of those things are depreciating assets. It is just, as Conrad used to say, but dumb to go into debt for a depreciating asset. You buy a new car on debt, you drive it off the lot, and you just lost 30%, right? That's just crazy. Why would you do that? You buy anything, any other of these things, they all are going to lose value immediately. The house would be the only thing that probably won't lose value, and depending, unless the market, you know, is wacky or something, but it's not going to lose that much value. It's going to take a long time. It's going to maintain its value. All these other things don't. So it makes no sense to go into debt for something that's going to lose value quickly. They should all be paid for in cash. So if a person doesn't have the cash to pay for something, he can't afford it, and therefore he shouldn't buy it. Right? That's my simple rule of life. If you don't have the cash, you can't afford it, and you shouldn't buy it. That's a real simple rule. And that includes a car for me. And I've explained this lots of times. But if somebody doesn't know this information yet and has a car payment, you should only ever have a car payment one time in your life until you get it paid off. And after that point, there's no reason to ever have a car payment again. Let's say you took out a $300 car payment. You know, so maybe it's like an $18,000 car or something, you're going to pay it off in 5 years or something. So you have a $300 car payment. And then you learn this information, you think, oh, borrower, servant to the lender, right? Shouldn't, you know, owe no man anything. Pay off the car. Maybe you can pay more than $300 a month, but you pay that $300 a month. That's all you can afford, maybe. You pay that off in 5 years. Chances are, if you have an $18,000 car in 5 years, it's still going to run for another 5 years, easily. Right, I've never even had a car that was even a fraction of $18,000, and I drive them for 10 years, right? I mean, I've never even had a car that was a third of that price, and I drive them for 10 years. So you get an $18,000 car, you pay that thing off in 5 years, it'll easily run for another 5 years. In the remaining 5 years, you know what you do? You take that $300 a month that you were sending to the bank, and you put that in a bank account. You pay yourself. You make the car payment to yourself. And guess what? In 5 years, you have $18,000 plus whatever interest you made. And then you can buy a car with cash. And then when you buy that car with cash, you know what you do? You put that $300 a month in that same fund, and you can buy another one with cash 10 years later, except you're not even going to need all that cash because you're going to have $36,000 in, later in 10 years. And so anyway, no reason to ever have more a car payment more than once in your life. I was just doing a little math here just in my own life and thinking back. I've never had a loan on anything except for student loans that I took out because the Army would pay it, which they did. But other than that, I never had a loan for anything. And I've never spent more than $5,000 on a car in my entire life. In 23 years, $5,000 was the most I ever spent. I bought one for $5,000. One before that was $4,500. One before that was $2,000. One before that, I think, was $1,100. And the one before that was given to me, old clunker that I had for like a year before I wrecked it on hitting a deer. And then the last car I had was given to me, which was nice. But you add that up, in 23 years, I've spent less than $13,000 on vehicles. In 23 years. Now, the last one, this one was given to me. Even if you add in the $8,000 that that was worth when it was given to me, so that's, what, $21,000. And I'm hoping to get 10 years out of that one. So that'll be over 30 years I will have spent, if I can make that one last, you know, for another few years, several years, over 30 years I would have spent $21,000 on vehicles. How much does the average person spend on vehicles in 30 years?
A lot more than that.
Twice, three times, five times, 10 times probably. I mean, yeah, most people have cars that are more expensive, multiple cars that are twice as much as that. So that just gives you an idea of where people's money goes, right? I mean, you can save a lot of money if you do the car thing right, and spend a lot of money if you don't. So anyway, I would not recommend being surety for anybody for a car, right? I don't recommend going into debt for a car, period. The other thing is, I found this out in my life too, that if you save for a car or for anything, by the time you work and save the money up, you don't want to buy the thing. Because let's say you buy a new car for $50,000, $60,000 like people do these days, and you finance the whole thing. If you had to work and save that $1,000 a month or whatever that car payment is, you know, the average car payment is $700 and some dollars a month. That's the average now, which is just crazy. But say you had to work and save that $1,000 a month for 5 years and you get that $50,000 or $60,000 saved up and you're looking at that bank account that says $50,000, most people are not going to say, yeah, I'm just going to go out and write that check out for that new car. They're going to say, no, I'm going to do the $20,000 car, which is just about as nice as the $50,000 car, only it's a few years older, and I'm going to pocket that $30,000, right? Not to mention I didn't pay all the interest on the loan, right? So, because I did that when I was younger. I wanted to get a sports car, so I started saving for the sports car. It was going to be used, something like $20,000 or something like that. And when I finally saved and got to the point where I could have bought the sports car, guess what? I didn't want the sports car, you know, so
money.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I mean, my preferences changed for one thing, and then I just didn't, I didn't want to spend the money. So
what if it's an electric car?
No. So anyway, that was a bit of a side note, but you definitely don't want to go be surety for something like that. Now, what if a person wants to finance a house or maybe a business startup? Well, what about in that case? Because, you know, that could be a legitimate reason to take on a loan. Would you want to be surety then? I would say no, because the bank will determine if that person is creditworthy or not. And that's why, you know, banks, when you want to take out a loan like that, they're going to look at your credit score, they're going to look at your income, they're going to look at probably at how much disposable income you have, your other debts, and they're going to determine, is this guy creditworthy? Will he pay this back or not? Now, if he's not creditworthy and the bank will not give him a loan, then you'd be crazy and a fool to be surety for him. If the bank looks at it and says, no, we're not going to loan money to this guy unless he has a cosigner, why would you want to be the cosigner when they wouldn't loan money to the guy on his own? It's a risk. I mean, they don't want to take on the risk to loan the money. Why would you take on a risk that a bank wouldn't take on? The bank's got a little more money than you do, right? They can stand to lose $200,000 on the bad mortgage. Can you? I mean, who can stand to lose $200,000? What normal person can stand to lose that? So that wouldn't make any sense at all. If the bank is dumb enough to give the guy the loan, but he can't afford the down payment, you'd also be a fool to loan it to him. Because if he doesn't have the down payment for the loan, that means that he has not shown that he is capable, or at least willing, to underconsume, to save money, you know, to get that down payment built up, and you'd be crazy to be surety for that or even to loan him that money. And I was just thinking about this, too, along these lines with the credit thing. One of the misnomers out there is that people tell you that it's a good thing to take on some debt, especially when you're young. It's good to take out a loan, get a car payment, get a whatever, because when you make those payments and you pay them every time, you'll get credit built up and you'll get a good credit score. I'm going to tell you that's a fallacy. Now, that may happen, but you don't have to do that, and I'm living proof of it. I just told you, I've never had a loan for anything. No house loan, no car loan, no furniture loans, no credit card balance that I paid on, no personal loans, except for those student loans when I was in college that the Army paid off right away. Never had a loan. I've got an 830 credit score, and I've never had a loan, right? So that just shows you that the fallacy that, oh, it's a good thing to take out debt and make payments because then you'll establish credit. You can establish credit without doing that. I don't know. I can't give you advice on how to establish credit except just pay your bills. And I don't know. I mean, that's all I ever did was just pay my bills. I don't know. I don't know how it happened. I'm not sure. But just do that. Don't be late on payments and you'll be fine. And I don't mean like debts, I just mean your regular bills, you know, just all your, you know, electric, rent, you know, phone, whatever. So anyway, just thought I would dispel that rumor too, because that's a common one. One thing that might not be a bad idea, just one more thing, and maybe I had a good credit score right from the beginning when I was young. And I don't, like I said, I don't know exactly how that happened, but I think one reason it might have happened is that my dad had a credit card and he put my name on the credit card so that I could use it I never used it. I wasn't really not allowed to use it, but it was more like an emergency thing in case, for whatever reason. I don't think I ever used it for anything. But I wonder if it wasn't just having my name on that card established credit. So that might not be a bad idea, I guess, for your kids you guys are obviously, you know, past that. But for your kid, when you have younger kids, put their name on your credit card. Don't even give them a credit card, of course. But that might help to establish credit for them so that, you know, when they do go out and they need to
start something, you know, too. They say that the longer you have the same card, the better it is for your credit score.
Oh, well, could be.
Like, don't cancel cards and get new cards every year. The longer you're established with one card, the better. Yeah.
Well, paying off one credit card with another one is probably not a sign of good creditworthiness.
Like if you pay one off, don't just cancel it and go get a different one.
Yeah. Yep. I'm not recommending giving your kids credit cards at all. So don't misunderstand me. But anyway, so that's what I have to say about being surety. And like I said, probably a pretty short Bible study tonight. But next time we'll pick it up with a question you asked, Judy, a long time ago. You asked me about this proverb, a gracious woman retaineth honor and strong men retain riches. I said, oh, we'll get to that someday. And it was like years ago. Well, we're finally going to get there.
Just a quick note at the end of the sermon. The most important thing a believer in Jesus Christ can do is to be a member of one of God's true churches. If you're not already a member of one, go to pastorwagner.com/churches to see if there is a true church or other believers of like faith near you. That's pastorwagner.com/churches.